At a time when we're losing our oldest and most precious trees and forests from around the world, I'm curious to understand if and why this matters to all of us. Welcome to the Meaning of Trees podcast. I'm Tom Hill, and it's here that I meet with people from all walks of life to explore the answers to one essential question. What do trees mean to you? When it comes to trees, my guest today needs little introduction. Ted Green, MBE, is conservation consultant to the Crown Estate, founder member and president of Ancient Tree Forum, and the creator and co-host of ARB Association's Thinking ARBs webinars. Often controversial in his pursuit of change, Ted has advocated for greater valuing of ancient and veteran trees since the 1990s. Now, in his 90th year, he's still relentlessly fighting for their recognition and protection in the UK and further afield. In our wide-ranging chat, Ted and I talk about his lifelong connection to trees and where it all began, humans as animals, his relationship with King Charles III, his new book, and how he's definitely not an arborist. I hope you enjoy listening to this one. Thanks, Ted, and welcome to the Meaning of Trees podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on here as a guest. And first of all, I'd like to start with that fundamental question, which is, Ted, what do trees mean to you?
Well, I suppose I've got to tell my history to actually introduce you to trees and me. And this obviously started when I was probably 6 or 7. I lived on the edge of Windsor Park. I didn't know where my father was. He had been reported missing. And so we were going to go at least 4.5 years not knowing where my father was. And I assume in that time I had quite a few contagious diseases which kept me away from school. So I literally ran wild. And it was then later in life I realised that those trees and that landscape, or what should we say, the trees and wildlife in parkland, some woodland of course, but big old trees and things like that, which I was running about in as a child, were to me actually giving me a reassurance that life goes on. These old trees, you could go and pat one, and it was always like it was saying, there, you know, carry on, Ted. You know, you're going to be okay. But you don't realise what part significance those trees and that landscape, listening to the birds and seeing animals and this sort of, actually played to keep me, if you like, probably sane. Because we didn't know. But then the only other reassurance there is that there were thousands, millions of people in a similar situation to my mother and me. And so as life went on, I had this background in nature. I left school and I actually went into a job which was all to do with biology. And that was in the university as a technician. I was there for 34 years. And being with scientists, that was the best education man could have, because I had this huge spread of all these people working in biology, all sorts of things. And so I learned a bit of this and a bit of that, because it's the only way I could help them. But all the way through that thread were trees. And then as you get older, you realise the importance of these trees. And so then from that point on, when I began to be, if you like, on a crusade to protect trees, with the pinnacle would have been the ancient trees. And of course, living on the edge of Windsor Park, I was in one of the biggest concentrations of ancient trees remaining in Europe. So who lands on his feet? And so therefore, I had this big example all around me. And that took me into the conservation issues and whatever to try and save old trees and the organisms and things that live in them. And from that point on, we pushed on. We formed the Ancient Tree Forum, which was a group of people. A lot of the early ones were what I call arborists, not foresters, arborists. Although, of course, I spent a lot of time with foresters as a young man before I knew about arboriculture. And the forestry and arboriculture should run parallel. One, we actually need, we definitely need foresters. Whatever you think, we need forestry, especially after Brexit. We really do need it. After those turkeys smoked it for Christmas, you know. And the arborist really is a profession which is based on the care of trees. It's a care. And a friend of mine in Spain, an arborist, calls himself a tree doctor, which I think sounds much better than tree surgeon. Yeah, tree doctor, because that's what they are. Their whole ethos is to save trees.
Well, one thing about doctors that separates them from surgeons is that they listen. They need to listen, right? They need to ask and inquire to understand. One thing that struck me when you were just speaking about those formative connections you formed with trees was how actually, you know, we're talking about the care of trees, but actually you were drawn to them because you felt they provided a kind of sustenance in those early years that perhaps you weren't finding elsewhere.
Yeah, sanctuary. And as you get older, I say to you at this bend at the end of this interview, go and touch a tree. Just go and touch it. Even a small one, like the ones you can see out of the window here. Just go and touch it. And there is definitely something between us and trees. I'm convinced of that. I'm convinced. And one of my sayings is that friendships made under a tree last the lifetime of the friends. And the other one, of course, is if you have a disagreement with somebody, go and stand under a tree. And it's different. It's absolutely different. It really does work.
Can you tell me about an experience with perhaps what might be the oldest tree that you've met, and how did that make you feel?
No, because it's happening all the time. It's an experience which we often have. But in my book, I talk about being with Jill in the High Cevennes in middle of France. We came into some woodland, beech woodland, which they'd all been cut in the past, but primarily for twigs and things like that. So it looked a bit like coppice, but also it looked a bit like pollards. And I have one of the pictures in my book because I stood in amongst these trees right up there in the High Cevennes, and I experienced what it must have been like 100 or 200 years ago. I could smell the horses, or maybe they may have been mules, because I could experience them coughing, because they would be the animals which took the branches down to the villages below. I could smell and experience those horses. I could smell the wood smoke from a fire, and the old boys smoking their clay pipes, because in those days they had these pipes which were quite long, chalk pipes, and they smoked tobacco in that. And I was there with those people. An incredible, I can experience it now, the atmosphere of being amongst, I call them working trees, because they were trees that were not going to be cut down. It was the product that they produced. So they were working for a living. They weren't quite coppice stalls, and they weren't quite pollard stores, but it was a way of managing trees for products. And I experienced that. It took me back in my mind to what it must have been like 100 or 200 years ago. And you have those experiences. And sometimes with the big oaks at Windsor, you go and stand next to one and you can almost feel the pageantry and all the rest of it, which took place because it was a hunting forest. And of course, the word forest in Windsor doesn't mean dense forest, which has happened today. It meant wood pasture for the animals to graze and for them a man to ride. So they may have cut some of the lower limbs off so they could ride their horses underneath. But some of those big trees are obviously where the king says, we gather at so-and-so, and the courtiers and whatever would meet at that tree, and then they'd ride off and hunt the deer. And of course, in those days, the Windsor Park was vast, absolutely vast.
So you're talking about how trees can transport us to a place in the past, actually, and trees and humans are inseparable.
Yes.
We wouldn't have survived as a species without them. And arguably, we are still not surviving without them. What do you think's changed? How do people view trees today relative to how they used to? And is there a danger if we forget about them?
Well, they were a product. And I think it depends on who you are and where you are. If it was the poor people, then it was obviously the products that the trees produced. And in a lot of cases, they never cut them down. They would coppice them or pollard them because they were a resource. You farm them, if you like. And the big old ones, of course, were what the aristocracy, they were proud of. Come and see my big tree or whatever. But equally, of course, in many cases, both for oak, beech and sweet chestnut, they produced food. In Britain, of course, the food was for the deer. And because that was what they hunted. And if you like, you were a poor person, you poached to provide food. And then, of course, there was the building the houses and everything that the wood timber would go to use. So it's difficult to believe that they actually had the foresight to think of keeping trees. I think we've always abused trees, except for some people. Like the people that did the pollarding, they recognised that they didn't want to cut the trees down because they were going to produce a renewable product or renewable products. So we have a mixed and a romantic idea there that man saved trees because he liked them. And I think that was left to the aristocracy. And Jill and myself have done horrendous journeys all over Europe and elsewhere. And one of the things you find is until you get down to the Mediterranean, you don't find many old trees. And if you think about it, they didn't have coal. The trees were used as wood fuel. When they stopped shedding, producing acorns, you cut it down and started again. It's a fruit tree. And Britain, of course, got coal very early on. And it's a small country. So coal took over from a wood fuel. Whereas there are big areas of France today which are still relying on wood fuel. So the woods get coppiced regularly and the timber goes off as wood fuel, be it as timber or as charcoal, because we got rail. Then the aristocracy, of course, kept trees because they were proud of these big trees, which they showed their neighbours. So that is probably one of the peculiar quirks of why the trees were actually saved.
It's like they could afford to keep them and not manage them almost. That was a show of wealth.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's quite interesting that coal is a product of old fossilised trees as well. It's almost like, we've cut out the middleware process quite literally.
Yes.
I'm curious to know, Ted, whether you're comfortable to talk about this, but in your career as someone working as an arborist and an advocate for old trees, etc., I'm interested to know In the journey you've been on, have you made any mistakes in perhaps how you thought about trees or what you might have done to them, perhaps that others could learn from? But yeah. Would you be comfortable sharing that?
Yeah, okay. But I'm not an arborist. I'm just a person that's passionate about old trees. So that's the first thing. And when our movement took off, that's the Ancient Tree Forum, which included quite a few arborists. We made the mistake of seeing these big old trees, which had been pollards, and we reduced them back to the previous cutting point. And there's no doubt we killed a lot of trees, ancient trees. But in doing so, I use the phrase, if you get something wrong, you learn from it. So we went through a phase where people were cutting these big old trees and killing them. We've moved on a lot from that now, but there's still a big debate going on as to what actually to do to these trees. And it's a horrendous debate. But the one thing about the UK is we've got the trees to learn from. Most other countries don't have them, or at least they have a few. So I would say we're still on this adventure.
Moving on to talk about your book then, Tree Time, I just want you to explain the concept of Tree Time. So the title, but yeah, what is Tree Time?
Well, it gradually evolved from the fact that the average person is here for less than 80 years, whereas the trees that I'm talking about, they're not even mature. So I think that gave us the idea of thinking, slow down. When we're learning about trees, don't expect it to happen straight away. If we think in trees, it gets us to slow down and stop looking at our wristwatches and think that tree's been here 400 years, 500 years, or it's 80 years old or something, and try and extrapolate from that. So I think that's how I got the idea of saying, let's think in tree time. And this book is my 80 or 90 years in tree time. And then other people will come along and hopefully build on some of the mistakes that we made or I made and some of the successes we've had. But all the time, the door is open for questions. But we're one of the countries in Europe, or the main country in Europe, I suppose, that can do this because we've got, you know, a lot of old examples. So, I suppose that's why I would say where we're lucky. But it does give us an incredible responsibility because nobody else has got them, so they haven't got the responsibility of these old trees. I mean, and I say that the UK single biggest obligation to conservation and preservation of biodiversity in Europe is looking after our old trees.
I know it's not cool to name drop, but I also know that you know the king,
yeah,
current king, and I'm curious to know how he might view trees, and have you got any insights on that? How do you know King Charles?
Well, Jill and myself got invited to go and meet him, well, probably 20 odd years ago now, and we both gave mini presentations to him on a Saturday morning down at Highgrove. And he brought in his gardening staff. So there were five other people there, including himself. And he sat through and listened to our talks. And then we talked. And he said, I do a reception once a year for charities. And he gave one for the Woodland Trust, because Jill was working for the Woodland Trust at the time. And we were allowed to get as many guests as possible in the hope of raising money for the Woodland Trust. So that was our entree. But in the meantime, he got us down there to Highgrove to pollard some young trees. and he actually pollarded his own trees. So he was hooked straight away. And then later on, we've met him a couple of times at different things, and now he's based in Windsor, and he's lifted the lid off Windsor and really into the conservation of the treescape of what Windsor was like, and he really is making way, which is incredible. And he recently had his birthday picture taken, and apparently he went out and chose the old tree to go and stand next to. So that is a man that's hooked on his ancient trees.
Before we started the interview, you started to say to me about the term native and perhaps how we misuse that. I wonder if you could, tell us a bit more about that.
Well, I think what the main problem is that nativeness can take up a lot of time when you could be talking about other things. Because I can't imagine a Frenchman or a German or a Spaniard, for that matter, talking about native trees, because they're part of a continent where organisms could move to and fro. We, unfortunately or fortunately, had 19 miles of sea, and the so-called ecologists are hooked on that.
Between us and the continent.
Yeah, and they're hooked on it, so therefore they devote a lot of time to this so-called protection. And I wonder why. Because if you look in the natural world, 19 miles of sea is nothing.
We're talking about what's considered indigenous tree species, right?
Yes, yeah. But, what's 19 miles? So they're devoting all this time to that, when in actual fact, we could get on with the real life. So I'm very, very concerned that we've got to move on from that.
I've also heard you say before, that actually the tree stock we have in this country is very likely already a great mixture from other places.
Well, one of the things which is, again, the so-called ecologists have missed off is that they separate man from other animals. In the past, when all this was worked out, we weren't seen as animals. So it was unnatural when we moved seas. Jay could do it, or a wood mouse could do it, or even a cow could do it, but a human being, oh, no, we're... So the whole concept is just, it's rubbish. It's built on rubbish. And let's face it, we're an animal. And so man would have been moving seed. In fact, I'll stick my neck out and say he was probably the major vector of moving seed, because he ate it. But I think that is where we're wrong, is to think of us as something different from other animals. We weren't. And, of course, if you go back to hunter-gatherers, before farmers, they probably protected bushes and trees anyway. They knew where to be at a certain time to collect the fruit. And as kids, I lived in a village on the edge of Windsor Park, but we knew where to be for collecting sweet chestnut to eat, hazels, to nip in the back of somebody's garden because the gooseberries were good. We knew that, and we were just ordinary kids. So imagine man as a survivor. He would have been conserving these trees and bushes and whatever, just the same. He knew where to be.
Coming back to your book briefly, and that being your account of your relationship with trees, one question I've got, and I know that scientists often discourage us from anthropomorphizing other species. I'm wondering if we could arbomorphize you, Ted. What kind of tree would you be now?
There's only one tree. That's an oak. The rest, I don't know. There's no discussion. Oak tree. It says everything. It's got everything. It does everything. As early man, we could have lived with oak and nothing else. It does everything. And the only other tree that might do that, believe it or not, is a holly. Holly has been in their past very, very important for us. Yeah. I mean, and then the leaves went for the animals to eat in the winter. Berries. I don't know what they did with the berries, but they were used. No, it was always totally used. Everything about the tree could be used.
So if you're an oak, what life stage are you in?
Well, I haven't got long to go, so I suppose I'd be ancient. I'd be in the ancient phase. Sobering thought, isn't it?
Love it. Last question then, Ted. If you're going to leave our listeners with one message about trees, what would that be? What do they need to be thinking about?
Go and touch a tree. Just go up to a tree and put your hand on the tree, whether it's winter or it's autumn or the spring or the summer. Go and touch a tree. We do it without thinking. We take trees for granted, but we owe them an incredible obligation for what they do for us, or what they do for planet Earth, really.
Listening to the Meaning of Trees podcast. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And see you next time.